my role now is to hopefully spark lively debate and discussions that bounce off those two fantastic presentations. I can see in the Q&A we're starting to get some questions coming through. We've got about 15 minutes, so I will try and ask each of the speakers to kind of give quite succinct answers, and then we can try and get through as many of the questions we can. Can I just provoke a question to both of you and sort of use chair's privilege just to sort of to ask the first question, which is, when I look at your last questions, you were talking about some of the the return on investment almost question. Both governments, like many governments around the world, are clearly setting, you know, almost wartime levels of public debt in terms of government expenditure. So clearly there is going to be a huge pressure to see return on investment. I guess a question to both of you, I can see this as both an opportunity for science and technology and research and innovation, but also what are the sort of the challenges to that? So I'll pass to you first, Mojo, and then to Ottilie.
Sure. So some of these metrics for U.S. Laboratories, for federal laboratories, are required by statute. So we have to, every single research agency has to report, for example, number of inventions, number of patents, number of collaborations, the amount of royalty collected. And that's one way that we can have metrics that are activity driven, right? But these metrics are not impact driven. They really don't talk about the impact as much as they talk about the activity. One of the things that we have found is that, so if you were to divide this, you know, the US portfolio, the $150 billion that goes into federal R&D, into intramural, which is research that gets done at the agencies by federal employees, and extramural, money that's given to universities and nonprofits to do the research, what you'll see is that we have a lot of activity metrics, right, on the federal side, on the intramural side. And we have a lot of, we have some impact metrics on the extramural side. But we don't have, in the way that would truly give you a complete picture, an impact study that would reflect all of the USG's contributions in the R&D arena. We have studies, for example, on GPS that has been done and, you know, its effect on the economy, or the fact that some of the areas of research in the US government have spurred actually industries, right? But we haven't done impact studies on those as much as we have done on the extramural side. Conversely, we have a lot of activity metrics.
Ottilie?
Yes, so I agree, having really convincing indicators for our government investment decisions, I think, is crucial. And they are really difficult to get high quality ones in the research innovation system, particularly kind of dynamically. And the relationship between the input and the impact, the real outcomes at the other end, is quite complicated. And so, although there are incredibly robust arguments that demonstrate that public sector investment really does both crowd in private sector investment and drive up productivity and all of these things, the instant returns are definitely not, they don't, it's very hard to do that fast. And so essentially the arguments that we need to be making now are this once in a generational opportunity in the context of the instability of the pandemic, the economic instability, to invest in that long-term high-quality, high-productivity economy, which will only come from an innovation-led economy. And I agree, it's incredibly challenging to make that argument in the context of massive national debt and social inequalities. So there's an obvious desire to invest much more straightforwardly in short-term things, but those short-term things are short-term and they will not last, and they will not build the long-term ambitions of a more equal and inclusive innovation-led economy, which is a positive feedback loop that it will build on itself. And unless you start that feedback, you will go nowhere. So it's a moment of really a key moment of opportunity to shift to that long-term growth, long-term, high-productive, inclusive economy, rather than this more short-term approach, which has attractions. You can see why it's attractive, and it's not that it's bad. It just won't give us that long-term stable growth that we need. So it's time to do our best to make that argument that it's an investment in the future.
Excellent, thank you. I've got one question from the audience. We've obviously talked today about international collaboration, in particular focused in on the opportunities between the UK and the US. There's been a lot of discussion, actually in result of the G7 meeting, about international collaboration and partnership with the rest parts of the world, especially on vaccine fees. I wonder what both of you thought about the sort of international outlook and how we sort of almost use research and innovation, science and technology for good on a global stage.
Which way around do you want to do this?
Ottilie, and you can lead the batting this time.
There's a number of layers to international collaboration, and as a funding agency, we have this issue all the time. On the one hand, there's the researchers and innovators themselves who are very motivated to collaborate to access the best ideas that there are around the world. And so that bottom-up drive is something that's really important and builds networks internationally that have both direct and indirect consequences on the global collaboration that I think we need to foster. We need to do that in a way that is mindful of security threats, and that's in some ways a particularly complex part of the equation to navigate, because it is very spontaneous and bottom-up generated. And then there's something that you can think of as more top-down, where there are national government priorities either to build specific collaborations or to drive particular R&I objectives. And again, I think there's a very interesting navigation between, we're a bunch of countries who have very aligned values and a key interest in a particular area. How can we most effectively use our joint assets, both in terms of public investment and expertise and infrastructures, to move our shared agendas forward? That's great. But then there's a huge amount of discussion about so-called soft power, and how can you use those research and innovation collaborations in the context of nations with whom one's trying to build a relationship and investigate the alignment of values. And that's also an interesting domain to explore, because you're again balancing the science and innovation objectives with actually something that's more of a diplomatic objective, and how one carefully marries those things, I think it is quite tricky. And we, as I said, as funders of research and innovation and research and innovation collaborations, are constantly trying to balance these various priorities, particularly again in the context of a specific budget, how you decide to invest to meet all of those multiple priorities is quite tricky.
Mojda from the US?
I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's a delicate balance of trying to, this is science diplomacy at its best, right? You know, we are during a pandemic. There's nothing more precious than human life. And to want to protect that using the results of R&D, be it public or private, I think it's a goal of everyone. But how do you balance that against other R&D considerations and a debate that has come up prior to the G7 was, what was the role of intellectual property, and how do we look at that, and Does it even, should we be talking about that, right? So it's a delicate balance between what science is there to do, which is to do good, right? And what are the larger implications? Should there be another pandemic? And where does one draw the line? Even if it's clear in this case, are there other cases that, you know, we would need to think about this delicate balance? But I also do know that during the G7, there was the commitment that was reiterated in very specific terms about reaching out and making sure that countries are committed, the G7 countries are committed to providing vaccines to other countries as well.
Excellent. Yeah, delicately well put by both of you. I'm just with 5 minutes to go. There's a few more questions are coming in, but I would just like both of you to just help me set up the breakout sessions. And we've tasked this esteemed audience to think about both the opportunities and challenges from international collaboration. And I'm hopefully going to put some words in your mouth, but it feels to me that both of you have very eloquently articulated, actually, this is an immensely exciting time where governments are really putting a spotlight on this agenda, both of science, research, technology, but also about opportunities for collaboration, both at home and abroad. I guess my hope is that both the breakout groups will give you lots of ideas. I guess my ask of you is, what do you want? What would you like to hear from those groups? Are you looking for more ideas? Are you looking for radical ideas? Are you looking for, but also, do you want to hear about some of the challenges? Invariably, these could be very closed questions, and so I'm hoping that you will elaborate a little bit. But it feels to me that there is a lot of opportunities here, but it will require us to probably think differently, act differently. Over to you. I'll start with our colleague from the US and then Ottoline to wrap up. So I
certainly would be very interested in hearing about the challenges and to be able to separate what challenges are, you know, myths, because sometimes we think something is a challenge because it wasn't done before. We believe that it can't be done, right? So what are the myths in the challenge category? And what are the actual challenges? What are things that we actually need to think about? What are the, you know, are these challenges that are, so to give you an example, you know, there is belief on funding that most funding cannot be, there is funding that is within a certain jurisdiction. So, you know, agencies that fund within a certain jurisdiction, is that necessarily the case? Can one collaborate if one is is not from that jurisdiction? They might not be the grant recipient, but does that mean they can't collaborate? And the answer is sometimes yes, sometimes no. So to make sure that we limit the scope of our challenges to what the challenges actually are, rather than to expand it to include the things that might not be. So that would be my ask, to not just identify them, but maybe even explore what are true challenges and what are myths or things that we culturally believe in the R&D world and might not necessarily be a hindrance or could be worked out.
Absolutely, I would agree with that. And I think another one of the reasons this is an exciting time, you know, it's exciting for, you know, all kinds of things are aligned, extraordinary opportunities in research and innovation, just amazing breakthroughs and new tools and technologies, huge. Lots of government alignment that research and innovation is crucial at a time of massive instability caused by the pandemic, which allows for change in a very positive way. And I think the other thing that we've learned from the pandemic is exactly that a lot of our assumptions are nonsense and we can do differently if we want to. And so taking that moment of opportunity, I think is great. But yes to everything already suggested in the context of challenges, but I'm also very, I would be also interested in opportunities, specific opportunities that people see that we can really action. How you do the juggling acts that we've all talked about, how you manage to balance some of the amazing ambitions for collaboration with the concerns about security, for example. Anything constructive is also good, as well as flagging of bad acts.
Excellent. Well, thank you to you both. This has been a fantastic session in terms of insights and others. I'm going to, on behalf of both the conference organisers and all the delegates here today, thank you for your presentations and your insights. I will ask you now, you can both successfully kind of exit off the stage, but thank you to you both. If we were at the Oxford College of choice, we would have been clapping you and saying thank you very much and inviting you for a drink at some point. But hopefully we can do that next year. So thank you very much to you both. And then I'll, in a couple of seconds, I'll set up the breakout session. So thank you.
Thank you.